Rapinda is offering free marketing to all the vegetables.
Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone, I'm Anne-Marie Currie and I'm presenting the program for this session. It's a really wonderful time of the year because it's still warm and we can be outdoors and enjoying nature. I've noticed lots of people on walks, meeting other people. I think there's more connecting going on in the community and that's always good for people's health and well-being. It's also a time where we can be taking stock because even though we may have started the year off with plans and so on, we've had a lockdown and that's kind of been a bit of a shake-up, a worrying time because nobody quite knew how long it might actually end up being. And it was fortunate that it was nipped in the bud. But the good news this week has been on the financial front that our leadership in that area from Grant Robertson has been very successful. So our credit rating is AAA. We're sitting at the top of the world for this result. I think it's a very good sign for New Zealand, and we're in a really good position compared with where we might have been. And we're also still on top of COVID compared with a number of other countries. And it's interesting to look at Europe and see how the vaccines have been rolled out there. And those in the UK seem to have a plan that's working well, and what they're doing seems to be effective. But what's happening in Europe generally doesn't look so hot. So maybe those people who didn't want Brexit might review their view of that in the light of this, because you know, Britain's made its own decisions and it's actually resulting in a much better set of outcomes for its citizens. Now, with uncertainty that we've had over COVID and in our own lives, with decisions that we might want to make about where we might want to be living, or whether we don't want to live where we are anymore, or you know, whatever, we've got all sorts of issues that keep coming up. And amongst the conversations I've had with seniors of late, where you live is really important to people, because if you've decided to move into the inner city in Auckland, you've got all the roadworks and the terrible mess and dislocation and the moving of bus stops and the dust and noise, and you've got all this to contend with day in and day out. And you've also got MIQ just around the corner, and it's not feeling all that safe for a lot of people. On the other hand, you've got people who've decided to move out of big cities and go into smaller towns because it's cheaper living and they can do more on their pension, and they can afford the housing. And people were skiting about paying $85,000 for a perfectly reasonable house on the West Coast. I remember before we went into the COVID situation. Now, with house prices rising around the country, there's flow-on effects to everywhere, so nowhere is really cheap. But we've got the problem of the COVID impact on the economy. So this morning's news, I was listening in early, and it's clear that the West Coast is in quite deep trouble. So the infrastructure is not going to be there. You know, the fire service hasn't got its volunteers. People have moved away because there aren't the jobs anymore, because there aren't the tourists, because the tourism was, you know, one of the mainstays of the economy down the coast. This has resulted in a very serious report being sent to Mr. Nash, the Minister of Tourism, and it's, you know, it's one of those really difficult situations. There's a limited amount of funding that the government has to deal with COVID anyway. And the regional projects that have mopped up a lot of money, that basket is pretty empty at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see how and what they decide to do in terms of actual actions on the ground. It's not to say there's nothing they can do, but it'll just be interesting to see how it's tackled. Now, Christchurch, of course, has been in the news over the last week, and I haven't chosen to make a program around the memorial for very personal reasons, as I lost family following the quake, and I was working on the front line down there, but having listened to a number of programs where people were phoning in about their experiences, I was tempted to make some comments, and so I will briefly just say that I think there are a lot of untold stories yet to come out of the woodwork, and resilient Cantabs, those of us born in Canterbury, it's part of our DNA, and we don't tend to open up and share that readily. So I think there's a lot of stories that are still to come out. And even on the day, there was some very good headlining commentary by Sebold Parker. Very moving. But the actual sort of on-the-ground stories didn't really percolate out until one or two days later in the late-night talkback sessions and this and the like. So I imagine there'll be more things to come. There've been some very good books written and some very good articles, and I've been keeping abreast of all that. I've got a little library of stuff there because I guess it's an important part of my history. I certainly was in Christchurch at a conference in 2008, and of course there were a lot of people there celebrating Christchurch becoming a safer city. None of us in the room thought of earthquakes in relation to Christchurch. It just wasn't on the radar. You know, we thought about that in relation to Wellington, but not Christchurch. And so Christchurch was the first city to become a safer city, accredited under an international body based in Sweden. And for 5 years, they'd collected data on major incidents, accidents and injuries, and in so many different sectors. And they'd looked at all kinds of interventions that could be done at the community level and be community-led and fostered. And so they came up with a very cogent plan, and that's how they became accredited. So we were there celebrating at this conference, and it really was very important. Looking back, it was quite seminal because it gave a strategic focus to every organisation in Christchurch to focus on safety and prevention. It meant people were very well connected, and it also meant that at the community-led front end, people were doing excellent work. So in Littleton, one of the areas quite badly affected by the quakes, they actually were probably the most effective community at galvanising and gathering up resources, at connecting people, at getting into be on the front line. In fact, it was an area that didn't need help. Some of the areas that were badly connected and there wasn't resourcing in the east of Christchurch, where the liquefaction was worst, that was where groups like the Salvation Army came into their own, and they brought in 150 workers from around New Zealand, and Air New Zealand flew them in, and the Salvation Army organised bulk accommodation at a motor camp, bused them across the city and fed them and organised them to go out in teams, supplying four-wheel drive vehicles, because most of the people had no transport locally. There were no buses, no taxis. Private vehicles were limited because hurricane fencing was barricading off streets, and many streets were not only a washing board type of road that was four-wheel drive really only, but they had broken pipes and large fountains of water 12 feet high shooting into the air was a common sight. So having worked on the front line in those conditions, meeting people who were just out of hospital, having been sent home early so the injured from the quakes could be treated, people without family, people whose nearest rallies were in London, particularly older people who had brave faces but bare cupboards, I devised several tests, like giving them a hug and seeing whether they shook, and I knew, we're dealing with post-traumatic stress here and they need to talk and they need to be able to unburden themselves because they probably haven't talked to anyone. And that was the case, as I found out. But also making a slight excuse to make a cup of tea, get into the kitchen and have a good look at what was available, what they actually had. Because I knew if I asked them, did you need anything, they would say, oh, I'm fine, and give a big smile. But really, in fact, they often lacked any toileting facilities. They didn't have the capacity to dig holes in their dried up gardens. They didn't have even the capacity to walk to the portaloos down the road, and in many cases stepping up into them was difficult. So all in all, the problems were numerous, the challenges were amazing, and after a week of this work, I've never been so tired, but I've never felt so rewarded. So it was a moving time in my life, and it changed a lot of things. It's one of the reasons that I advocate for seniors' wellbeing, because I know how they're often the most vulnerable and the least catered for or thought about. So it's important that we do understand what the needs are and that we are accurate about that. And that's what the Salvation Army did so well. They actually worked with the government and collected data on this whole exercise that would inform any future kind of environment like that. So the learnings from Christchurch were very great, but what underpinned a lot of the success of the agencies working together at the time of the quake was that Safer Cities movement that underpinned all the preparation that had gone in, not with any intent to face an earthquake, but it was so valuable. And people often praise the leader, in this case Sir Bob Parker, and certainly he deserved praise for his leadership, but the work of the organisations and what they achieved together was phenomenal, and without them doing that, his leadership would have been mere words. There has to be an embodiment. There has to be some way of actually concretising the action. And this was achieved through all that preparatory work that had gone on prior to the disaster itself. Now, dealing with uncertainty, which is the theme of this program, and looking into our well-being and supporting our well-being, is sort of an ongoing challenge. I mean, people might think, oh, well, this is what you do when you consider what New Year's resolutions you might subscribe to this year. But it's much bigger than that. And a lot of things are coming out under the investigation into mental health in New Zealand. A lot of things are coming out in terms of people admitting to their feelings of anxiety or depression around the uncertainty and the pressure that COVID has put on them. A lot of people are talking about well-being or prioritising well-being in a way that's different from the past. As I've been listening to seniors, I've been amazed actually how many seniors are out there with quite dire needs, because only 50% have additional income apart from the National Super. So National Super for a person living alone is just over $400 a week. Now, if your rates and house insurance is taking up 120 plus of that, or if you are renting, you'll be paying heaps. I mean, some people are paying more than three quarters of their pension in rent. And yes, they can get a supplement from WINS, but that's only around $150. And sometimes that's all they have to live on for everything else. So it is really difficult. So I've come across people who've got their cars off the road, not registered and warranted, are walking and catching buses because they can't afford petrol for the car that they have registered. People who are taking their power bill to WINS and hoping that they'll be able to get it paid forward so they can have that money taken out of their pension. But of course, that's going to be tough in the winter, even with the winter energy payment, the extra $20 a week. I've already worked out that my extra money will be earmarked to pay some other expenses, including healthcare and teeth. And it's very difficult when you're dealing with teeth because the cost is astronomical and eye-watering. I mean, my bills are going to be well over $4,000. And so it's hard to find an appropriate source of income. I mean, WINS limit is about $1,300. Well, that goes nowhere. That might take out some of the teeth, but it doesn't give you any way of finding the cost of the replacement plate, which might start at $1,200. For a partial plate and go up to $2,400. So how do you do it? I mean, do you just end up with no teeth in your mouth and not able to eat? You know, it's a real dilemma. And so as I've had these conversations with people, I've realised that there are little pockets of help available from different sources, but people don't know. And so I've got into the habit of saying to people, well, go to the CAB because they're often the first port of call and they can direct you to other places. Oh, what's the CAB? And I would have thought a lot of people knew that, but it's amazing how many people have no idea. And also older people are not used to putting their hand up or asking for help. So perhaps knowing about these agencies and that is something they just don't necessarily click into easily. The CAB is Citizens Advice Bureau, and apart from being able to be found on the web, they are usually you can usually locate them through the library because often they're based in the library building or very nearby, so they're attached to a community house or certainly a local government-funded site. So that's the first thing, and they are a source of information. So they may not provide all the services or all the support that you need, but they can direct you to different places. There are budgeting services around, and some of them have COVID funding money. So, for example, if you're having difficulty with your electricity, if you're one of six providers, I won't name these six, but they're part of the scheme, you'd have to check with the budget service themselves as to whether your provider is part of the scheme. But if they are, until the end of April, there is some money available and you can get a credit put onto your account. And you can then choose how to eke that out. But it's certainly going to ease your weekly bills quite considerably. There are low interest or no interest loans. If you put Good Shepherd loans into Google, you will actually find that you can get $1,500 interest free that you can borrow and pay back over a year. You can also get larger amounts, up to about $5,000 at 7% interest, which on $3,000 ends up about $210 extra in over a year. And you can pay those back over up to 36 months. So the repayments could be quite low. They could be about $30 a week. In other words, they could come into the affordable category for some people. So there are, if you have a broken washing machine and it's not really worth getting it repaired, if you need to buy a new machine or you need a new walker or an electric chair, or you need car repairs done, or your teeth fixed, or whatever. These are the sort of loans for that purpose that come into play. They're not for people to have holidays and luxury items, but they, you know, are tied to quotes, and the actual money gets paid to the supplier of the goods. So it's a really good setup. And certainly worthwhile investigating. And you can tell your friends and the other people know. There's no age limit with this. It's not age-related. So it might suit some young person who's trying to fund getting into university. It might help them pay some of their basic living costs. And really can help anybody who might otherwise slide into the pit of the loan sharks, and rather than people going down that pathway, this is to actually try to help keep them afloat so they don't get into worse circumstances. Now, in thinking about well-being, I was looking at some resources on the net, and I've been particularly fascinated by the Mental Health Foundation and what they produce. Now, their resources about exploring your way to well-being, they're available at www.mhaw.nz. But you can also ring them and get them to send a booklet out to you. I've mentioned their Five Ways to Well-being and programs over recent years. Give, be active, keep learning, connect, and take notice. And the one of the five ways that I really emphasize the most is connect. Because when you connect, when you're talking and listening to others, when you're sharing information, this is when you learn the most about what's out there. This is when you feel less isolated and you're self-esteem rises, your sense of value, and your sense of well-being increases. So this is a really dynamically important thing. In the past, people connected naturally because the community operated through school events. Everyone went to the same school. Everyone in the neighbourhood went to the annual fair. And there were sort of accepted places, bumping spaces, as we now refer to them as, places where people would just naturally have an opportunity to talk and connect. And in our busy lives and in our commuting all over the place and our high levels of mobility with motor cars, we just don't connect as much. So those people who've chosen to be out walking and to continue that since COVID lockdowns last year are noticing that they are connecting more with people in the street and leaving the car behind, even if it's one or two days a week. Not only does it save petrol, but it actually means you connect more, that you're more active in keeping a radar out and learning about what is going on in your community. Of course, the other way to well-being, take notice, that is probably one that escapes a lot of people. It's one that doesn't get a lot of emphasis. It's one that's encouraged by people who keep gratitude journals and do exercises like that. It's in the mindfulness category. And so we're going to do a number of programs around mindfulness this year as part of our theme, following on from gratitude. It's important to watch your thought processes because there are some things you can't change. There are some circumstances that come upon you that have nothing to do with you. You didn't cause them in any obvious sense, but you have to grapple with them. And so when you're finding yourself challenged, that's when doing those inner works that I refer to them as, the mindfulness exercises, the keeping the gratitude journal, the practicing, for example, just greeting people in the street. and making a habit of it, greeting the bus driver when you get on the bus. Simple things, but they actually can shift your dial. They can increase the joy in your life, and they can set your tone for the day in a way that is quite effortless. It's quite easy, it costs nothing, and when you invest in that, you're investing in not only your own well-being, but the well-being of others around you. And when you think it creates a ripple effect. So you've got a grumpy bus driver, you speak kindly and positively as you get on the bus. You don't know what impact that's going to have immediately, but it may be that that person just ends up preventing an accident by the way they drive, because they feel somebody's acknowledged them, they feel a little bit better about themselves, or they just that much more alert because they feel more important and more valued in their role. There are many things that can happen in life that seem inconsequential and don't seem that valuable, but they can have huge impact. And we're not always aware of what the impact is. We can't always tell. We don't always get the feedback. And that's why it's so important to do these things, because we are just vibrationally making a difference in our world through that connecting. Now, I've talked about connection, but I haven't referred to the earth. I haven't referred to roots, or the fact that we are importantly linked to planet Earth and the well-being of planet Earth, and our well-being is linked to that, the well-being of the planet and vice versa. But when I look at a lot of the well-being books lately that are coming out, there's a very strong emphasis, particularly from Indigenous writers, about connecting to your roots, about being mindful about the land, the vibrations of the land, where your ancestors have been on this planet, and using that as part of anchoring your well-being. So Dr. Tara Rye Trent's book I've referred to in previous programs last year, in that in her journey she talked about taking a stone that was very important, and carrying that stone with her around when she moved to the US and from Africa and so on. She also wrote down her dreams and buried those in a sealed container in earth and on an important site at a spot that was very meaningful to her, and would dig that up and read the paper and rebury it from time to time. And that was part of her anchoring her dream. So she was a woman who had no education, sitting in the dust in a village in Africa in a circle with other women, and asked what her dream was. And she said, I want to get educated, and I want to get a degree, and I want to get a master's, and I want to get a PhD. I want to go to the US and do my PhD. And that seemed very extraordinary, but it was a very clear concept that came out of her and subsequently got written down. And then, through the most extraordinary trials and challenges, it was achieved. So there are many examples, but that one was one I just thought I would like to share. When you're thinking about your own well-being, sometimes you might think, oh, well, it's selfish to think about my well-being. There's so-and-so and so-and-so, and, you know, there's too much going on. I can't focus on me. And that's part of being caught up in that web of life. But it is really important to learn to listen to yourself, listen to your own mental chatter, slow your mind down and focus. Take time to focus. So thank you for listening today, and we'll look forward to further programs in March and through the year where we pick up these themes. Thank you.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6 or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/seniorfocus, and do note Senior Focus